story for today. A despondent woman was walking along the beach when she saw a bottle in the sand. She picked it up and pulled out the cork, and voila, a big puff of smoke came out and appeared. "You have released me from my prison," the genie told her. "To show you my thanks, I will grant you 3 wishes. But take care, for with each wish, your mate will receive double of whatever you request." "Why?" the woman asked. "That bum left me for another woman." "That is how it is written," replied the genie. The woman shrugged and then said, "Ask for $1 million. And there was a flash of light, and the $1 million appeared at her feet. And at the same instant, in a far-off place, her wayward husband looked down and to see twice that amount at his feet. "And your second wish?" "Genie, I want the world's most expensive diamond necklace." Another flash of light, and a woman was holding the precious treasure. And in that distant place, her husband was looking for a gem broker to buy his latest bonanza. "Genie, is it really true that my husband has $2 million and more jewels than I do, and that he gets double of whatever I wish for?" The genie says, "Indeed, that is true." "Okay, genie, I'm ready for my last wish. Scare me half to death." I read that and I said, okay, that'll fit quite well into the message. It's amazing how we can twist words around to get what we want. No matter what, the woman twisted the genie around to get some kind of punishment on her husband. You could put it or twist it around and make it a man or a woman or whatever you want. So how can you see these texts, this text as it written? Can you manipulate it in a lot of different ways? Can you say that women are manipulative and men are evil? Do you want to look at it that way? Or do you want to, various different ways in which you can see the text? And that is true in the message today. John is written, which I knew but never sunk into my head. One of the should have been moved to the next to the last book in the Bible, because that's where it places in the timeline. I never realized, or it never sunk into my head, that it was written in that such a later time, somewhere around 80 and 90 in the common era, 85 to 90. Paul is before that. Jesus and the other two Gospels are before that. All the writings are before that, except Revelations. And I'm not going to get into whether or not John wrote Revelations or not. That's not a part of the message. I'm only dealing with John's Gospel. So I want to look at how John looks at this scripture and what he's trying to say. We can, in many different ways, apply the Bible and get whatever you really want. Just as the story in which I read. You can apply it in a lot of different ways, and you can manipulate the Bible to get an idea of however you want. Or you have a big area in which you can grow on it. The Bible is not just one thought the whole way through. It's a lot of different branches and a lot of different mixtures of a lot of different people expressing a lot of different ideas. And it grows. I have always tried to stay kind of neutral and actually try to see what the Bible actually says. I'm not particularly interested in trying to support, as I said, one particular idea over another. I really try to see what is trying to be said. And sometimes that gets be very, very confusing because a lot of different writers are saying a lot of different things. So you have to kind of choose along the way. Or you have to build a structure. So as I have gotten older and older, I'm becoming more and more a universalist. So if I'm biased in that direction. I will admit that. I'm not interested in the idea of a Calvinist point of view that some are saved at the expense of others, or that you have to do certain things and all this type of stuff. I think it has a part of the richness of Christianity. But I'm more interested, I will admit, and I do believe that the Bible points towards a universal idea, a universal redemption or reconciliation of some sort. John had the advantage of reading Paul, reading the Gospels, and then writing what he wrote. I see John as the beginning of a long line, or beginning, or adding to what Paul already wrote, of non-literal writings. He started writing in a spiritual way and giving spiritual understandings to what Jesus said. He was the youngest of the disciples, and he lived the longest, and he was the only one that I know of that wasn't killed. He lived a ripe old age and died. He was the only one that did, as far as I know. Correct me if I'm wrong. And so he had a long life to live and to look at what Jesus said in the beginning of the Christian church through Paul, Peter, and then John writes this letter. Paul Johnson, this guy here, who is from England, he's an historian, and he writes some things that really I think I agree with very much. He writes in a very, kind of like I said, a non, he's not trying to support any particular idea within in the faith, but he really looking at it from a historical point of view. And I have said many times that I think Paul has been misunderstood, and still today is misunderstood. He writes that Paul was probably the beginning of a universalist idea. And he writes, I'm only going to read a little bit, a couple little things here and there. Paul moves across the religious viewpoints from the narrow secularism to the militant universalist, and from the strict legalism to a complete repudiation of the law. The first Christian to do so. Not even Jesus had gone so far. Paul insists repeatedly that his change of view was instant and complete and was in fact miraculous. He did not have to argue himself around the idea or convince himself of it, but he had the truth in all its abundance revealed to him instantaneously by Jesus himself. In other words, he was struck down on the way to Damascus, and suddenly his whole life was changed instantaneously. He didn't have to be argued into believing what he believed. He saw it, understood it, it changed his life completely, and he went on from there. He came from Tarsus, which has been termed the Athens of Asia Minor, and it was a trading emporium, a center of cults of all kind, Gnostics, exotics, Oriental, Stoics, and it was a religious crossroads and a city familiar with weird religious processions outdoors, Hellenistic debates within. Paul was a product of this diversity, and thus he can be presented as Hellenistic or a rabbi or a mystic or even a Gnostic. He was well equipped to be the apostle of universalism, and I agree with that. I agree, Paul, in his effort to move from just a Jewish faith to everyone. He said salvation was for everyone, for the slave, free, on and on and on, everyone. That was a unique idea. As much as we don't, and even today, we don't accept that universally. We don't. Paul was unique in the beginning of that, and thus Paul Johnson is saying that Paul is the beginning of a universalist idea. And John will expound on that some more as I will get into. One more thing I want to read, and then I'll be done reading. He established, meaning Paul, the right to think in full Hellenistic sense. Hellenistic is, for me, is a spiritual dimension that was added by the Greeks and the Romans to Christianity. Much of our spiritual understanding grew out of that, out of the Greek and Roman thought. If you believe that you leave your body here and you go to live in, and you don't take your body with you and you go to live in heaven and you get another body, that's a Hellenistic idea. That's not a biblical idea. And thus showed that Christian faith had nothing to fear from the power of thought. Schweitzer called Paul the patron saint of thought in Christianity and added, all those who think to serve the gospel of Christ by destroying the liberty of thinking must hide their faces from him or Paul. Paul opened up the idea of thought, whether we agree with everything Paul said or not. He certainly moved the line from just Jewish faith to all.
Is Hellenistic the same as holistic?
No.
No.
I don't think so, is it? Holistic, no. Holistic faith has to do with, a holistic healing has to do with everything, all, you know, body, mind, and soul.
Yeah.
Hellenizing is a word, Greek and Rome. Yeah. And that's heavy into Christianity, whether you believe it or not. It is. It's very heavy. Like I said, most of your spiritual ideas come from, begin in the Hellenistic or the Greek and Roman ideas and moved over. Paul accepted a lot of them and started to incorporate some of them in. Especially in 2 Corinthians, and I think is definitely misunderstood. And so, he began the process, I believe, of opening up to everyone. And John takes advantage of this idea, I believe, in a lot of ways. Yes, John takes on an idea of good and evil, that this dynamic of that at some point in time, the earth has to be redeemed and saved. So the words, God so loved the world. We'll start with them. God so loved what? The world. And for John, it was the cosmos. The world meant cosmos, the universe. Not the earth, which is understood in different places. It can be taken, the world, within the Bible in several different ways. But John understood that the world was the cosmos, the universe, everything that was created. And he said, God so loved it. Meaning that God so loved it with such a greatness. But the word is loved. It doesn't say loves. It says loved. So what does that imply? That implies to me that at one time, John is trying to say us that the world was perfect and in right order, and now it is not. In other words, God loved it in the past, but John is letting it open to a future event. God so loved it that he gave his one and only son, that whosoever believes in him should not perish but have everlasting life. Now, we discussed it on the way over. Do you take that phrase as being exclusive or inclusive? God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten. Whosoever believes, them three words, do you take them as being exclusive or inclusive? I take them as being inclusive because they are written in a time when whosoever was never thought of. Because religions at that time were race-related, state-related, and each one had their own. So there was no idea whosoever. That idea wasn't there. If you were a Roman, you served the Roman gods, of the Greek gods, the Egyptian gods, the Jewish God, and on and on. There was not a whosoever anywhere. So again, I see this text as John is opening up the world and the love of God and the redemptive plan to everyone, including the universe and matter itself. Even though John goes on to make this dichotomy of this fight against good and evil, he will go on and say that that ultimately in the end is a part of the redemption of the world in which Jesus was about. He sees Jesus as a cosmic event, not as just a simple little event for the Jewish people or whatever. He sees this as a huge cosmic event. Now remember, John is writing this about 100 years, or probably about Jesus, they claim about 33, he ascended. So about 85, 90, John is writing this. So he has, the temple has been destroyed. And so he is the first person to write after the temple has been destroyed. Paul and all of them wrote before the temple was destroyed. And now John is writing after the temple has been destroyed. That's a great divide in between time. And so he's seeing, in my estimate, he's opening up to everyone. Now, not everyone agrees with that. I will tell you that for certain. That the idea that whosoever is seen as a restrictive. In other words, you have to believe, you have to do something. That's called an Armenian point of view. Whosoever. Yes.
Who said God so loved the world, John?
John is right. Now, that's a good question. One I've overlooked. Because some translation, Jeannie, you might want to look. You've got four different kinds.
Yeah. Says, James, it's whosoever. But modern language and revised standard is just whoever. But the Living Bible translates it anyone. Anyone who.
Okay, so that's something I didn't know against. So see how translations go along the way? But what I want to point out is some texts quote John as stopping at verse 15, that Jesus said only up to 15. And what I read, they say Jesus didn't say, and they don't put it in quotations, and they say it's merely John writing it. There's a dispute over who said what. And whether or not it's John's words. And so you should have a text that some show and some don't, that Jesus said these words in quotations.
I don't have any. Well, actually, the Living Bible has quotation marks. I guess the others do too, but not the King James.
Well, so some do and some don't. Some will, most all will have it down to verse 15. So, to answer your question, did Jesus actually say these words? Well, that's another debate altogether. Because quotations in which John is using, even though he's lived around Jesus, did he get it quoted correctly?
Also, they didn't have punctuation.
Yes, and it didn't have punctuation.
So, it's more like when Moses said, John, or Jesus said that, whosoever. Instead of saying Jesus said whosoever, that's
the wrong. So, that whosoever.
Right. The way that the Greek worked at the time, there weren't direct quotes. It was someone said that this.
Okay. So somebody took this, and Tyndale probably, and took it and made it into quotes. Right. And that's a very important point that I will look to. That's why I like interaction. It all said you to believe.
Said believe that Christ said that.
Anyone who believes. Yes, that idea is there. But the idea is, in which I'm trying to put forth, is that an exclusive or an inclusive idea in the setting in which it's been given.
It can be interpreted. The nice thing about Scripture is that you can take it and interpret it in different ways at different times in your life.
Yes.
And every time I read it, it tells me something new.
Yes. That's the beauty of the text. That's the beauty of the Bible. It can be understood. Now, if I would have come to this text, if I come to this text with an Arminian point of view or a Calvinist point of view, I am going to say that only those who believe are going to be saved. That's it. There's going to be some that are condemned to hell. And if you're a Calvinist or a hyper-Calvinist, all kinds of degrees of Calvinism, then there's only a certain amount of people that are going to make it, And I did find a reading that said just that the word world meant only those who were saved. Yes. Yes. So they're going to interpret it in light of their doctrine and dogma.
Yes.
Yes. And that's what I'm trying to say here. Are you honestly reading the Bible for what it's trying to say? Or are you trying to eisegesis the text or read into it? Are you reading exegesis it? Reading out of the text, allowing the text to speak to you is honest ideas? Or are you trying to read into the Bible an idea? Yes. Translations, edited comments.
They do is they add their own point of views or their own biases in their text so that they have control.
It's amazing how you can change a two-letter word, a one-letter word, and get something totally different. I call them words exit ramps and on-ramps to ideas. Because you can change the whole thing just by adding an A, and it just goes shoom, 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 all over. Just by adding them simple words and changing that simple word. That's the beauty of the text. That's why you're supposed to be spirit-led, spirit-filled. You're supposed to be calm yourself and listen and see what the text says and not be biased. There's a whole lot of bias that's out there. So I see that Paul Johnson says the same thing. He agrees that John was expounded a more universal idea and sees it as adding to what Paul already did. But again, not everyone sees this. This idea will destroy a lot of doctrine and dogma. It just throws it out the window. As simple as that. When you start moving towards that direction of possible universal salvation or redemption, you run into a lot of opposition. Now, John goes on to say that whosoever believes in him is not condemned. Okay, I would agree with that. But he also says that whoever does not believe stands condemned already, because the idea was that unless you were a Jewish person and believed like the Jewish person, you were condemned. Or if you're a Roman and you believe like a Roman, you were condemned. So your own individual religious faith condemned you if you weren't a good Jewish person. And then again, there's diversity in Jewish faith that, I don't know, even if you just took Jewish faith and said, I want to be a good Jew during the time of Jesus' time, you would have had a great difficulty because of the diversity of belief even in Jesus' time. So if anybody thinks that Christianity had it together back then and not today, they're fooling themselves. It's never been together. That's the beauty of it all, the universality of it all, because it doesn't agree. It doesn't have a straight line. It is spirit-led, spirit-filled as you want to believe. I say that loosely, want to believe. I don't know about that either. I thought maybe you were working on a thought though. I see the Crusades as overzealous Catholic Church trying to regain and go back to a time that and relive a time that. And they wanted to reclaim Jerusalem and for temple reasons and what have you. I don't think that the Crusades necessarily were done in a good light myself. Now, as far as missionaries going over into various different, had different beliefs. I read a book a long time ago. My oldest brother gave it to me, and it was about a missionary, a husband and wife team, who went over into somewhere around India, somewhere in that neck of the woods over there somewhere, and they figured out that rather than trying to destroy all their old beliefs, they just added Jesus to the top of it, and that worked a lot better. And that's why I see what Jesus taught was an ingredient that should be added anywhere to anybody's belief. When you step out of your narrow cultic or your racial belief system and start saying, okay, I'm going to love this one and I'm going to love that one and I'm going to love that one, that's a Jesus idea. Now you move to a universal idea.
And any religion.
Right.
Can do that.
Right. And any religion, any faith can do that. I don't care. Right. If you want to. We're still at that point where we don't want to. That's why we still have racism. We still have all this kind of stuff because we don't want to do what Jesus told us to do. I'm sorry, we're not. But when you start stepping out and saying, you think different than me, and that's okay, and I'm going to love you as my brother or my sister, then you're starting to be Jesus-like. That's what Paul was talking about when salvation for the slave, free the Gentile. He wasn't supporting slavery as some people want to manipulate it. He was saying that salvation is for everybody, no matter where you're at, what walk of life, what ethnic group you are, no matter what. And that's essentially what happened at Pentecost. There was a lot of people who were not of the Jewish faith. They were converted Jews, but they were of all different nationalities. And the Spirit of God poured upon them. It was a universal idea. We don't get that. And that is important, I think. Anybody else want to comment?
There are a few of us here who grew up in this church, in this congregation, but I think the rest of them are younger than I am. I grew up here. Did you guys ever have Mabel Thomas as a Sunday school teacher? Because I think I predate all the other people who grew up here. And I feel like I was taught in this church that God loves everybody. And I don't know that I was actually taught that everybody will be saved, but that everybody can be saved. That's kind of a nebulous.
I won't say that everyone is saved, nor does anybody who thinks in a universalist point of view. We lean towards a very strong possibility of, I cannot say, because I'm not God, that all of humanity will be saved. But there are verses that say that all of creation will be redeemed in a way or redone. And so that means everyone. That means everything and everything. Now, whether or not you accept the idea that matter can be changed to be perfect again, and I don't know what that even looks like. And what a human heart that looks that is not corrupted, I don't even know what that looks like. So, but that is a biblical idea that eventually, and that's what John goes, eventually he goes to this parallelism between good and evil throughout, and that in the end, evil will be done away with, and God and Jesus will reign here on this earth. That is a Jewish idea also. That's a very prominent idea within the Christian faith. I'm not sure. I see matter as being eventually decaying and falling apart. Matter as I know it, like this earth, this soil, our bodies, eventually it's going to come to an end. John assumes that God loved the world and loved the created world how it was or how it should be. I'm not sure, I'll say this again very carefully, I'm not sure that the God who created the physical matter and the physical universe was necessarily had good intent. And thus, but yet God still loved it. Now, that's why redemption is necessary. Maybe if I would go back a little bit further and say, okay, yes, it was a time in the garden that Genesis talks about a time when there was harmony before the fall and that matter was in harmony to God. But I'm not sure that pre-fall or that whole idea that Genesis is necessarily talking about a world in which we see today. I'm thinking that he is talking about a world that is more spiritually made, and that through the fall process, we have matter the way we have it now. Gets to be very deep, gets to be very complicated, and gets to go, this is all the things that I struggle with and deal with and continually. I'm always in flux. I'm always changing. I'm always looking for some new idea, some new understanding. I pray for understanding. And this is what I see things as, for right or wrong. I'm not saying I'm right or wrong. It's simply an idea that I'm presenting. Because the idea, yes, two back here.
So what you're saying is, even though it's the beginning of purity,
the beginning what?
The beginning stages of life, when even though you're pure at that point, life itself is going to eventually corrupt you.
We assume that a baby is pure. What does that mean?
Well, it has no knowledge to be right or wrong.
I know, but it has flesh.
So therefore, it has to be pure.
She says it has flesh, so it's automatically corrupted.
Matter, yeah.
It's matter. It decays. The minute you're born, you begin to die. You ever hear that phrase?
Yeah. Yeah, but he's talking about the idea system and the value system that you have when you're born. You don't have any value system or any idea system when you're born. You're a blank slate.
Well, that's an argument that is not, that's not substantiated either.
Because
blank slate. Prodigies. How do you deal with prodigies? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm just saying little children will love anybody, color, skin, anything. I mean, all they know is love. So right there they know something.
Right.
And most times they will get along until they are corrupted by our thoughts.
You need to get the microphone when she's talking, so we can hear
her. Well, stand up and turn around. Stand up, Connor.
Well, just say it.
So that she said that a baby, when it's born, loves unconditionally. But in the end, that it begins to be corrupted by our thoughts. So it's not necessarily...
It's the same with animals. Like, they're abused and they're going to be mean.
She says the same thing with animals. She deals a lot with that. You all know that. So they're taught to be mean. And that's true. But they're not a blank slate. Yes.
Yeah.
They hear music. Yes, Connie, I'm sorry, I forgot.
Two things. Your talk of the creation, that it may have been an evil intent, whatever.
Not evil, but just not done in the right, perfect light.
I've always thought, or come to be comfortable with the thought, that world was more of a, let's see what happens thing.
Let's push this button and see what happens.
Rather than a full intent of evil and a full intent of good. It's more, let's see what we can do type thing.
So then if that's the case, then if you're saying that let's push the button and see what happens, and let it go however it wants to go, then is that really in good intent and perfect intent?
Well, you start then. You put the tree of good and evil, the thought of good and evil, right in the middle. You know, you eat the apple and you know everything.
So there's no apple.
It's all together. The other thing about a baby being pure, yes and no. Because I do believe some people are born with something wrong in their brain that allows them to be so totally self-centered that the rest of the world to them is expendable.
So that's genetics.
What?
Genetics.
Genetics. You're saying, which I've gone to before, genetics. I think genetics have a lot to do with who we are, how we're created, and we want to say God created us, but how can God create something that is, like you say, just grows up and is evil? Do what?
Nurture versus nature.
What?
Nurture versus
nature.
But then you have all sorts of examples of people in horrible situations growing up that managed to be good people when they grew up, and people in great situations growing up becoming terrible when they grew up.
That's where I say genetics come in. Or environment, maybe something was bad happened to them and this enhanced their genetic tendency.
Rebel against you know, their silver spoon kind of stuff, you know.
So what made me leave the conservative Mennonite faith and be where I'm at now? I mean, that's minor in compared to what we're talking about, but something drove me out, or my inquisitiveness or my questioning drove me out.
And that's probably with relations with different people, environment, you know.
But is that genetic?
No.
You learned that you got smarter.
Intelligence, right? Oh, wow. Well, that was a really good compliment. Wow. But some people would say, I went bad.
Yes, some people would.
Right, right. So.
It was just all my influence.
Yes, Dan.
Different circumstances affect one person altogether different than they would another.
Yeah, it does. Different circumstances affect different people differently. Okay.
Talking
about what? Yes.
Does that change? Or is that an absolute?
What is a base of perfect?
The concept of perfect.
What is that?
The concept of perfect world in the Bible.
What would that be?
Stories, what would that be? What is it compared to what it would be now?
The only thing I see in Genesis about a perfect world was that Adam and Eve, or the characters, were in harmony with God. There was a harmony that happened.
They were in harmony with something.
Something. A spirit of God or something. Yes. Is that a picture of perfection? Connie.
We would find that very bland. We're structured for adversity. To be always the same, not have to work toward, you know, a large goal, or to suffer for something. We're not made that way.
That goes back, in my opinion, to a story long ago by the Sumers. And if you care to read that, that says we were created by heavenly beings to be workers. That's why we work all the time. We're made to work. Let's face it. If we don't work, we're like a machine that'll just break down and quit. I'm sorry. That's just what happens. We were created to work. There is a lot of richness in our past and in our future in this text. We're not going to come to a consensus in this, just in our small group here. There's no way.
It'll lead to something else,
and something else, it'll get bigger, this, and that, and it goes on and on. This is what Paul started, is what Paul Johnson is saying. Paul started this, and John is kicking it off even further yet. But it depends on how you see and interpretate the verse or the writings. Anybody have anything else they want to add?
And she's comfortable. to a great deal caused out.
Great point.
For the sake of doctrine and
yes.
different denominations.
Yes. We have killed diversity. The Christian church denominationally has killed diversity, which is Jewish faith. I think I agree with that. Even the Muslim faith has that. But denominational Christianity killed diversity. It has.
And I believe that God loves diversity.
Right.
Why else would he make thousands of kinds of insects?
Are you implying that humans are insects?
No.
I know you're not.
We have almost as much variety in kinds of people as we have in kinds of insects.
There are a lot of diversity in people. It's diversity in thought.
Colleen says that is not diversity in people or insects, it's diversity in thought.
I was brought up in this congregation that God loves us all and would be bored if everybody were exactly the same.
But not everybody is brought up that way, Jeannie.
I know that.
A large percentage of us were not brought up that way.
Alas for them.
This is unique. Just us sitting here doing what we're doing is very, very unique in the Christian faith.
Yes.
Believe me.
Yes, because 99% of the churches won't even allow
it. No. You're absolutely right, Connie.
Overnight with a friend, that was it. And when I chose the church, I chose it because I liked the people. They were genuinely Christian and thought and acted in those ways. They did not judge. They did not go strutting around, I am Christian type thing. They just were. And that's what drew me here and has kept me here.
This isn't a unique church. Just what we're doing is definitely unique. Most churches, you would be taught a certain way to believe in that. And if you didn't believe that way, you're down the road. And that's as simple as that. And I'm not trying to point my finger. I think it's a problem that needs to be addressed by the Christian church, for sure.
You knew my grandparents.
Yeah, they were lovely people.
I had to be fairly old before I appreciated where I came from.
Oh, I'd love to be first time I met them.
They were very accepting, very open.
I'll make one more point. It says, the way you tell people whether or not they love God or not, whether they love darkness or they like light, or they search the truth, or they are not really searching the truth. If he talks about truth and light. So if you go back to the idea of which denominations are killing different ideas, are they killing the truth? If I say to you, you cannot believe that way, because this is my translation. If I stood up here and said, you have to believe this way, well, you wouldn't anyway, but... I would be forcing you to not see the truth or only see the truth in the direction in which I see it or the means in which I see it. And I see that as being not looking into the light or coming into the light. The light is about getting brighter and brighter. The light is not about I'm better than you. The idea of light and the light getting brighter, it meaning that you are encompassing more and more and more and more and more. You are not saying that is wrong, this is right, that is wrong, this is right. The light simply goes brighter. You have a brighter light in your head. A light bulb goes off. We use that illustration. Yes.
See, that's what's unique about this church is because we expand our enlightenment by having discussions like this.
Right.
Which you do not find in most churches.
No, you won't. I'll guarantee. You all know that. We're patting ourselves on the back. But we should. I mean, we should. That should be one of our points that we say to people. But not everybody, like Carol says, likes the idea of I have to think. Some people want to be told what to think. They want to say, okay, you're okay. Believe this and you're okay. Shoebox religion. Shoebox faith. So even though we see this as our advantage, not everybody does. They would, some people would say, you're just all confused. And this is the problem we have. This is the problem we have. But the idea that light gets brighter is an effort to get away from good and evil and the duality. Light gets brighter, brighter, brighter. Your view gets bigger and bigger and bigger. No judgment, no judging. You're looking for the faith. You're looking for the truth. Where over here, you always have to judge it. You always have to say, I like this idea. I don't like that idea. I keep telling in our discussions, you don't have to say that you like this idea and you don't like that idea. You don't have to categorize it in these two things. You can have one in the middle that says mystery. Just let it there as mystery. You don't have to decide. Let it grow and fester. Anybody else have anything else they want to add? With that, I will say amen.
every day, and the peace that you give, which passes understanding. Having received so much, we offer all we have, our time, our talents, and our money for your kingdom. Please bless these gifts to the work of your church.